discretion is advised.
Live from Glasgow, Scotland, it's time for the revolution in professional wrestling radio as Robert and Kenny prepare to take you inside the ropes.
Hello everyone and welcome to a special Inside the Ropes weekend episode. It's a weekend episode. It's Saturday, the day before WWE Extreme Rules, the one night of the year where the WWE get as extreme as they're allowed to be in the current climate of American entertainment. This Inside the Ropes episode is going to be mostly about Extreme Rules and our predictions, our preview chat, what we think is going to be coming up, a little nugget of audio joy to keep you entertained before Extreme Rules airs tomorrow night on the WWE Network. Or if you're a big stupid head, as Jerry Lawler would say, if you order it on a pay-per-view. Morons. My name is Robert Duffin. I'm here with Kenny McIntosh, and we're going to chat about many things, but mostly Extreme Rules. Kenny, how are you?
I'm good. It's been an eventful week. I know that we have in the last couple of weeks had a bump in listenership from some of the people that used to listen to What Culture and have kind of come over to the dark side of Inside the Ropes. So it's been really nice hearing everyone talk about how they're going to miss me doing as many podcasts with What Culture. But as I've said before, I've not left What Culture. I've just taken a step back because there is a more pressing event coming up. It's only the biggest Evening With tour in UK history that's coming in July with Paul Heyman. So I appreciate all the nice messages, and you'll be able to hear me here every single week twice at Inside the Ropes talking wrestling with Robert. It's been a good week. Paul Heyman tickets went on sale on Friday. Didn't go as smoothly as we'd hoped, but it began.
Well, yes. It's interesting, actually. I saw Paul Heyman put a tweet out about, well, a fan tweeted him asking him never to retire, because obviously he does take extended breaks from WWE when Brock Lesnar is not around. He's off, you know, suplexing cows on his farm or whatever. And Heyman replied to him saying, "Retire?" 4 exclamation marks. 4. Saying, "I'm just figuring out how to do this right. I have barely started." So that gives you an idea, an insight into the mind of the advocate of Extreme before he embarks on this summer tour of the UK with Inside the Ropes. He is ready to meet his fans and probably shoot from the hip and say a lot of things while he's on tour with us that maybe he wouldn't say in other environments.
Well, one thing that I don't want to give away too much here, but I feel like I can give a nugget away here. One of the packages that we are offering for the Paul Heyman tour is the Extreme VIP package, which has already sold out in London. It sold out in like 90 seconds. Manchester, Glasgow will be this Monday, don't worry. But one of the parts of Extreme VIP originally, when we had come up with the concept, was Paul Heyman was going to be involved more directly with that concept and with that package. And I don't want to go into too much detail, but we were talking about it and he was totally open to it and all that sort of stuff. And in the end, we agreed to not have him be a part of that package. And instead, he is going to, on the first night in London, explain why he is not a part of that package. And I know I'm being very vague, but what he has got to say is going to be something that everybody who follows wrestling will want to hear.
Well, you've worded that incredibly poorly, Kenny, if you don't mind me saying, because what you said was that Paul Heyman does not want to be part of that extreme VIP package, which is not exactly the case. What you mean is there was an element...
Yes, that's an element.
An element to the extreme VIP package.
Of course he's a part of it, yeah.
Well, yeah. Just in case people start shitting themselves that they've bought extreme VIP tickets and they think, oh, Heyman's not going to be there, okay.
Look, it's been a long week, right?
Right, so but I'm going to explain it. I'm going to explain it for the people. What Kenny meant was there was an additional element to the extreme VIP package that was floated to Paul. We won't, like you say, we won't go into details of exactly what it is we wanted him to do. But it's something that people have asked about, okay? So if you're smart and you've asked us about, like, oh, you know, you got Sting in face paint, you got Steiner in the headdress, I'll just say no more. There was something that we wanted maybe Heyman to do, and he said that he couldn't do it and that on the first night of the tour, he'd be happy to say why, and his answer would create headlines around the world. Now, if you're not going to be at the first night of the tour, do not worry, because I think that he will be happily telling this story on every night of the tour, because I think it will be very, very exciting indeed. But as we said, the tickets started to go on sale on Friday, then there was a problem. Basically, Paul Heyman broke the internet. He didn't even have to get his large, oily ass out like Kim Kardashian did to do so. He just had to be his excellent self. And there's obviously some people that were disappointed by that, but we will just say that the demand was insane, and we knew that. We knew it was going to be crazy, which is why we had a pre-sale for previous VIP customers to try and, you know, pocket those guys together. And then the three cities were put on sale at staggered times, 12, 2 and 4. Was that right?
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, we hoped that we would stagger out the number of people that were trying to get on at any one time. But unfortunately, no, you guys were just too ravenous and crashed the ticketing system. Now, do not misunderestimate us. We knew that the demand was going to be high. We invested an awful lot in putting together the best possible ticket system that we could. The next option for us, other than doing it that way, would be to go to someone like Ticketmaster or Ticketweb and to sell it through them. And yes, they do bring a lot more robust and sturdy payment systems that they can still crash too, to be fair. But unfortunately, it would have incurred much higher costs to you, our listeners and the people that come to our shows, and we just figured that it wasn't really worth costing you guys more money. Like, the price of the tickets would have gone up significantly to involve an outside ticketing agency. So we did everything we could, and well, Paul Heyman still broke the internet, but they'll be back on sale on Monday without any hiccups, and everything will be fine. And everybody who bought tickets still has tickets, and everybody who wants tickets will still be able to get tickets on Monday at insidetheropes.co.uk for an evening with Paul Heyman, the advocate of extreme, in London, Manchester, and Glasgow.
And just to run down the times, 5 p.m. UK time, and I say UK time because there are people travelling. There's already people from Ireland and Holland who have bought tickets, so it's going to be an international affair. But 5 p.m. on Monday is when the London tickets will go back on sale. There are still VIP tickets, there are still general admission tickets, but there are like less than half left for both. So if you want to go VIP, I'd recommend doing that as soon as you can. If you want to go general admission, you know, you should be okay for the next couple of weeks, but this is not one of those ones where you go, I'll just buy a ticket on the night, like, because there's probably not going to be any. And that's not us trying to, like, get your money. It's the truth. 6 o'clock, the Manchester tickets will go on sale. That'll be the extreme VIPs, the VIPs, and the general admission. Like I say, the extreme VIPs, of which there are a very limited quantity, did go in about 90 seconds in London. So we expect it to be the same in Manchester. So if you want to go extreme VIP, you just need to be, you know, Mr. Refresh or Mrs. Refresh and hope that you can grab that. 7 o'clock will be the Glasgow tickets, same as Manchester. But yeah, so we look forward to everybody joining us. It's going to be a belter of a tour. The thing is, Paul Heyman on his own is great. You know, like, nobody in their right mind could fuck that up. But when you put Paul Heyman on a stage with the Inside the Ropes production and the research that we put into things and the way we produce things, I would be very surprised if this experience will ever be matched again. So, get your tickets, insidetheropes.co.uk on Monday. And there will be extra autographs on sale in the weeks leading up to the event. And I think that's everything. about it.
I do think so. I do think so. But how's your week been anyway, Kenny, other than Paul Heyman related madness?
Good. It's been fine. I got I was talking about, obviously I'd been off sick with the stomach ulcer and all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
I got my blood. I went and got my blood taken on Thursday. Got my results back yesterday. My blood's back to normal, so that's good.
So you had enough donations from the Make-A-Wish page.
I did.
The Kickstarter to get Kenny some blood.
They threatened to send me Roman Reigns to cheer me up, so that immediately boosted my blood levels, just so you didn't have to come over.
Oh.
But yeah, how's your week been? Because obviously, you know, you are not just a podcaster extraordinaire. You're also
a man
who teaches the youth of today about how to become Roman Reigns haters in the future.
as my Twitter page says, I am a shit Batman, podcast man by night, English teacher by day.
It depends what Batman you're talking about. I mean, you're definitely better than George Clooney.
Oh, thank you. That's the nicest thing you've ever said about me. I'm good. I just had my last week of school placement, so that's cool. I finished. I'm officially a nationally qualified teacher, so that's fun. I get to find out where I'm going to work next year on Monday, so I'm looking forward to that. Or not. Slightly dreading it. But today has been fun, because for the past 5 weeks, like my own, I've not really had that many little pockets of time to do things that I want to do. Like, or if I have, there's always been a burden of guilt that came with it, because I'm like, oh, I've got so much work to do. But now I don't. So it's great. So like today I like finished a book that I've been reading for ages, and I never had enough time to finish it. So I finished a book. It's called The Corrections by Jonathan Franzen. It's very good. It's not a sponsor of the podcast or anything, but it's a very good book. And I also got to start watching Horace and Pete, which is like it's not really a TV show. It's like it sort of is. It's an episodic thing that Louis C.K. made with his own money, with him and Steve Buscemi and Alan Alda. And he sort of filmed it secretly, and then he self-released it online so that you could buy it through his website. Which I did. I bought it through his website because I kind of really admire his, I'm going to put my own money on the line and then I'll sell it. And there's no middleman. He's not making it for anybody. It's just like, you know, if you buy it, he's getting the money. He's getting all of your money. So I watched the first episode of that, and it was really cool. And then after having bought it like 2 weeks ago, I got to listen to the new Radiohead album today in full properly. And I really enjoy it, but I just want to keep punching myself in the dick, because they're doing a tour this summer, but it's like one of those shit tours where it's like three nights in a pokey venue in London. And then they're doing festivals, but like no UK festivals, all ones abroad. And I just hate that I'm not getting to go see them, because I really would like to see them live again. And there's a couple of different places around Europe that they're going to, but it's like all sold out, because like the European festivals are so much better than the British ones, because there's like good bands and sunshine and not many Neds. So I'm just really annoyed that I'm not going to any of those summer festivals.
Well, Drew, it's funny you mention that, because my flatmates are very big music fans. Like they're very into their music, and I'm one of the most annoying people. In that, you know, I'll hear a song and I'll like it, but I'll never know who it was by or what it was. It just can't compute for me. But anyway, one of my friends took me to see a band called Battles.
They're in the
ABC, and they were fun. So anyway, for whatever reason, I managed to get through 31 years of life without ever going to a music festival. Like, I've just never been to one, and it's just a combination of, like, in Scotland, we have this festival called Tea in the Park, which originally was, by all accounts from people who are older, was a really good festival at one point, and then became, like, Ned Central. Ned being a chav, or if you're in America, what would you call a Ned, if people are listening from America?
Like a hick?
No, it's not like a heck. It's like a
scumbag,
like a gang member, like you know, young kids who
I don't know. I think like they're very British thing. I don't think that America really has.
Yeah, it's hard to describe. But anyway, the whole thing is, I am breaking my festival virginity this year
because
in 2 weeks I'm going to Primavera.
You motherfucker!
Which is a festival in Barcelona. And I'm pretty excited about it, because I have no concept of most of the people there. I know Radiohead are going to be there, but apparently My friends have told me I need to go and see the OC's and LCD sound system.
Oh, I hate you so much.
But the one I'm really excited about is that John Carpenter, the famous movie director,
I hate you. Let's just... this podcast is fucking over. I can't have all the... Do you know what? When you said you were going to a festival, I swear in my head, I said, if he says he's going to Primavera, I'm going to reach through the Skype computer and punch him in the face. But yeah, Primavera being headlined by all-time favourites Radiohead, LCD Sound System, PJ Harvey, fucking John Carpenter's doing his Lost Themes live. He's not, well, he is coming to the UK to do it, but he's not coming to Scotland, God's sake. Now I'm starting to sympathise for those Irish Parliament fans. That'll be good, and I'll spend that weekend with a Kenny Macintosh voodoo doll, which got
the
a lot
very
of action.
Witches of Easter Coffee.
Yeah, it got a lot of action a couple of weeks ago. I was stabbing it in the gut, but
that was very uncalled for. Should we talk about some wrestling? Is there anything going on?
That's going to be good, though. You're going to really enjoy that and not appreciate it at all.
Well, no, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that will be good. Let's just do a quick chat about anything that's been happening this week. Have you got anything that you want to talk about that's been happening? Before we get into Extreme Rules, any chit-chat from the news world?
Is there anything going on? It doesn't really seem like there has been that much going on. There was obviously the Lillian Garcia controversy, which is now over because she's back. It's all good. There was NXT spoilers, which we can't really talk about because Sandra will be listening and she'll get annoyed if there's a spoiler. Something I wanted to ask you about was John Cena. Like, obviously he's returning in a week and a bit.
Yes, and I have heard of him.
And I think he's 39 now, so he'll be 40 soon. And I just wonder, like...
Yes, he will be.
do you think that John Cena's role in the company is going to drastically change in the next kind of 12 months? Because, like, the only comparison I can make to it, it's not the same as, like, so when Bruno Sammartino, he was the champion through to, like, what, 77?
Yeah, he was champion for, like, 100 years.
Yeah, and then, like,
He, like, won it off a Stegosaurus... lost it to
Tyrannosaurus Rex. He lost it to Superstar Billy Graham. Yes. The second time. And then, but then Billy Graham dropped it to Bob Backlund. Bob Backlund was the champion for 5 years. But the thing that I think is quite an interesting comparison for people who don't know, so Bruno Sammartino was the biggest name in the Northeast. Like, he was the Hulk Hogan, the Stone Cold Steve Austin. He was the guy. And then Vince McMahon Sr. decided to move the belt on somebody younger, and that was Bob Backlund. But Bob Backlund never really drew the same as Bruno Sammartino.
I see where this is going.
So the comparison nowadays is that is Roman Reigns the Bob Backlund, who is the younger one, not quite as good as Bruno or Cena, kind of put in this unenviable spot of having to follow the guy before him, and... But the biggest thing that's going to hurt Bob/Roman is that Cena's still going to be around. So is Cena like the Sammartino he'll be the one that main events the shows, and Roman Reigns will be the champion that, like, you know, is
so
like
basically in a sort of roundabout way, you're wondering if Roman Reigns is going to start being booked in a way, in terms of where he is on the card. Similar to the way CM Punk was booked, in that he's the champion, he's having title matches, but they're maybe on halfway through the show and John Cena's still headlining.
Yeah, or is John Cena now going to have to adopt more of a mid-card position and Roman Reigns takes the top spot?
I think that he is going to adopt more of a mid-card position. I think that's kind of been happening in the year before, or even 18 months more than that, before John Cena was injured and had to go away and get fixed up. He was already starting to, you know, he was WrestleMania 30, biggest WrestleMania of all time, you know, big anniversary show. And he was not in the main event. He was in a sort of mid-card main event with Bray Wyatt. And then
fighting
for his legacy. And then the year after, he was fighting for the United States with the US title on the line against Rusev, and then he embarked on this sort of 6-7 month US title thing. And I guess I sort of see that the transition now is much, much easier, because if Cena disappeared when he was headlining every pay-per-view with an injury, then maybe it would be more of a, oh shit, is he going to come back and Roman's going to suffer? I think that because he was already transitioning and moving up and down the card quite easily, quite fluidly, that it will be easier for him to come back, still be a big franchise player, but for WWE to still continue to put the focus on Reigns and make him the guy that is in the main event, legit main event, last match on the card of the pay-per-view. But I think the big question is, and I was going to ask, you know what, fuck it, I was going to ask you this at the end, but I'll just do it now. I was going to ask you who you want to see, because, you know, spoilers, we'll mention this when we talk about Extreme Rules, but I think we both know who's going to leave with the title. And that then presumably means the end of the current feud, and more people will step up to challenge Roman. And I think the real telling thing regarding your original question is Roman Reigns and John Cena are on a collision course, like, right now. Now, they are, you know, separated by the vast gulf of sports entertainment space at the moment. They are two bright, shining, you know, meteors, asteroids flying through space, but they are on a collision course. They are gonna meet at some point. They have to. And one of them is going to utterly destroy the other. And I think for the sake of the business, I know who has to destroy who. And I'm intrigued to see where the crowd goes, because I think that, strangely enough, people have always asked the question, you know, John Cena, the reaction he gets, you know, what's going to happen? Like, will fans ever warm up to him on the whole? Will he ever get a uniformly warm crowd response? Is he going to come out for his Hall of Fame induction when he's an older man and still get boos? And I sort of think, before I started thinking about this, I always thought, yeah, probably. Like, I even think it's Hall of Fame. There might be some dicks that try to do the Cena sucks thing. But I think that a feud with Roman Reigns, with John Cena as the franchise, as the rock, the stone of the company, not that rock, definitely not that fucking rock, and and Roman Reigns is the sort of up-and-coming guy who seems to piss a lot of fans off, who I would say is, no argument, much, much more hostile reactions towards Reigns than Cena, could end up being the thing that finally turns Cena around in a lot of people's eyes. You know, I think, I mean, when it comes down to it, I think maybe people might side with John Cena, but I don't know, that maybe they won't. Maybe they'll be like, oh no, definitely not this guy. I've been booing Roman, but I'm going to back the younger guy over this old fart, which he's not. But I think that's interesting. I feel like John Cena and Roman Reigns have to fight, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in that match.
But historically, if you look at how Vince McMahon has treated his top guys, like, they get to a certain point and he then wants to dispose of them from the top spot. You know, like, Hulk Hogan, by 91 or 92, Vince had decided, that's it. You know, he's too old. Randy Savage, too old. And these were guys that went on to offer a lot more in another company. And it'll be interesting to see how he presents. So, and you are right, inevitably it's going to lead to Roman Reigns versus John Cena. But I think that there's going to be a lot of politics and a lot of backstage shenanigans on how John Cena is portrayed and how Roman Reigns is portrayed and all this sort of stuff. And I was listening to an interview, actually, the other day with Kevin Eck, who was a creative writer in WWE from 2011 to 2014. And he left in the summer of 2014, but he remembered that when Roman Reigns was, like, on the rise in 2014, uh-huh, that, like, Vince McMahon's thing in creative meetings was he would always be saying, right, we don't want to push Roman down people's throats. Like, we really don't want to push people down. And he'd be asking the creative team all the time, are we pushing him too hard or whatever? And Vince's whole thing was, I want the people to choose Roman and not have it look like we chose him.
Oh, dear.
And I actually think that that probably would have worked, but I think the biggest mistake they made was choosing to have Daniel Bryan return for the 2015 Royal Rumble. Because that just murdered Reigns,
yeah,
at that point. And it's interesting because it's nice to hear that Vince, in his mind at least, wanted Roman to be chosen by the fans. But it almost feels like now, like they're not going to change course. Like, they're just going to... And then I heard another interview, actually, in the last couple of days with somebody who's going to be back on Inside the Ropes soon, actually, former WWE writer Alex Greenfield. And he compared Roman Reigns to... You remember when John Cena... I don't know if you were watching at this point. I don't think you were. But when John Cena was the champion the first time and he had the feud with Edge.
Uh-huh.
And the whole Rated R Superstar thing.
Yeah.
And Greenfield said that, like, it was finally Batman had found his Joker. You know, like, Edge was the Joker. And finally, there was a heel that, you know, brought the best out in Cena. And those matches, I mean, those matches do still stand up. Like, they're probably one of the best in terms of getting fans to react to Cena the way that the company wanted the fans to react to him. And the comparison was made that, you know, with maybe Vince is going to keep pushing Roman Reigns until they find his Joker. Until they find some. But the problem is that if you look at it, you know, you
I don't know who that would be, though.
Yeah, because back to your original question, which was, I know I've swung around the roundabout a bit, but your question was, who do we see Roman Reigns feuding with?
Yeah.
But the big money feuds, the big two, or the big three, actually, are all with guys who the fans love far more than Roman. John Cena, Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins.
Seth Rollins. Well, I had a list of people that I thought, I'm just going to run through them. And see what you think, okay? So, obviously, you just mentioned there Seth Rollins. He's due back very, very soon. There's been, you know, official slash unofficial dates floating around on Twitter. It's happening soon. It would make sense. He left as champion. He was injured while he was champion, so he never lost. So, he has a natural claim to the belt. But as you say, when he comes back, he's going to come back and he's going to get cheered. And I actually think that, you know, if they make him a heel, or if he attacks Roman, it's not going to necessarily have the intended effect. I think they said he was due back on TV around about June 6th, which is going to be brilliant. I mean, I've missed him from TV, so I'm looking forward to it.
But do you think with Rollins, Rollins is probably the, because we also kind of to bring up as part of the discussion, I guess, that in the next month or so we're going to have Cena, Rollins, Wyatt. All these guys coming back. Orton's going to be in there as well.
And obviously, they were... I'll get to him in a minute, actually. But they were thinking about... They were obviously had something in mind with Bray and Roman because they had that great Raw where they tag-teamed, remember? And then that was when Wyatt got injured on the UK tour and nothing ever came of that. But they had something in motion there. But what it was, I don't know. But
it seemed to be... But with Rollins... Because, I mean, if you look at the roster right now, they have no... main event heels.
Not really.
So, Wyatt's going to come back as a babyface, apparently. If you know, if they do what they did before, then you're going to have Cena as a babyface, Reigns as a babyface, AJ as a babyface, and then Rollins. When Rollins comes back, people are going to want to love him.
Yeah, they are. And it's going to be very, very hard.
So, are they going to have to turn Rollins heel? And then Dave Meltzer, actually, somebody tweeted him the other day and asked him about, and I want to get your opinion on this, asked him about, like, returns and, like, should returns be surprises or should they be built up or whatever? And Dave Meltzer's answer was, the biggest return in modern-day pro wrestling was Triple H in 2002. And the reason was the build-up and the vignettes and U2 and all that. So... Do you think that, like, with Rollins as an example of the returns, like, how do you want to see it done? Do you want it to be a surprise? Do you want to see it built up? And how do you want to see him come back? What capacity?
I think that I would like it to be hyped. I mean, the thing is, nowadays, we're going to know anyway, right? There's a very, very, very small chance that they can keep it a true secret. And I think, you know, surprise returns are great when you do them, but I think that when they're monumental shifts, like his return is, then I think you should build it up. I would like them just to see, I would just like to see them lift wholesale, the Triple H return thing. Let's see how hard he's worked to come back and do a, you know, we can rebuild him style setup for it. Announce the date, make it a big thing, have him come back, and I kind of want to see him come back as a babyface because I think that although his run as champion last year was good and he wasn't always serviced with the best booking or the best stories, but I mean, his best performances or his best performance, I think, was in the match with John Cena at SummerSlam last year, and he worked that as babyface. Like, everyone said that at the time, that John Cena seemed to be working more as a heel, and Rollins, you know, broke out the babyface offense. And I just really want to see that. I mean, even if it's only for a little while, you know, if they have him turn, you know, whatever. Although I'm increasingly beginning to notice that maybe they are finally getting behind their own belief that there's no such thing as babyfaces and heels. I mean, look at the AJ Styles Roman Reigns thing. Like, they've got two sort of groups of guys clobbering each other every week, and they've not really given it either a deliberate "these guys are good, these guys are bad" type of character. So I don't really know, but I'm looking forward to Rollins coming back. I was going to quickly...
So yeah, you've got a list.
Well, obviously I was talking about Rollins. We've already mentioned Cena. I think Cena and Reigns at SummerSlam is a no-brainer at this point.
Do you think they do SummerSlam, or do they wait to WrestleMania?
I think they might do SummerSlam. But it depends on what they want to do with Rollins. There's another guy whose name I thought of when I looked at the people, like a list of people. And this is actually one that I want to put like a nix on. This is one that I don't want to see this at anymore, because I think this has been... I feel like this match has been done to death with very, you know, low stakes, and it's never really been quite the dramatic match that it should be, and that's Roman Reigns versus Dean Ambrose. Like, it's been done so many times. They've been, but the problem is that it's not really that shocking anymore for, like, you know, people, like, oh, what if Dean turns heel on Roman, or Roman turns heel on Dean? It's like, it's not really that shocking to see these two guys, these brothers, go at it when they've wrestled each other so many, many times, especially towards the tail end of last year. You know, there was the Survivor Series main event, and then there was, you know, Fastlane, where they had the triple threat with Brock. So, you know, this idea of that being a match that people... I don't think people want to see it. I don't want to see it. I don't know about you, but I'm like, nah, I'm not interested.
Well, I was going to say, I know I'm probably jumping to somebody else on your list, and this person might not even be on your list, but one of the things that we'll get to in the Extreme Rules preview is somebody who I would quite like to see Roman have maybe like a two-month program with, or like, you know, maybe just May to July or something, is Chris Jericho.
Well, funny you should say it, because Jericho is the name that I circled on the list, because you were saying before, you know, we were talking about Reigns finding his Joker and whatever, and of course, Jericho's not around long enough really to make this a thing, but now that we know that it's... I mean, he tweeted saying, you know, he was done, his run was over, and so now there's lots of, you know, rife speculation that he finishes up tomorrow night, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just...
Although he is expected to be around until SummerSlam.
Oh, really? Okay, well, if that's the case, then stop wasting time, because right now Jericho is a heel on TV that people actually are booing, and that makes it all the more... I mean, I remember before WrestleMania when I said I think that Jericho might go over Styles, because Jericho is going to be Roman's first guy, you know, give him a veteran guy to work with and a guy who knows how to get people to boo him. And I think that Jericho has been doing that. And if he doesn't clash with Reigns on at least one pay-per-view, you know, that would be a night... Oh, and what's the next pay-per-view? Is it Money in the Bank?
Yes, Money in the Bank, June, Battleground, July.
So June or July, like... Well, actually, no, more Money in the Bank, because obviously you've got the big ladder match. That would be a very nice mid-show World Heavyweight title match, because I just think that Jericho could maybe, the way that he's really irritating live crowds and really pissing people off, could maybe help Roman a little bit. I just think that's the and if he doesn't, then I'm going to really look back on the Jericho Ambrose thing with even more disdain, because I mean, I don't like it very much, and I might like it even less if it came at the expense of a potential Roman Reigns Chris Jericho hookup. Well, not like that, but
it's a different type of show.
It's a different type of show.
Who else have you got on your list?
Is that it? Is there anyone I've not mentioned? There wasn't that many.
Brock Lesnar.
I didn't put Lesnar. Because
do you
think
Lesnar will be on there?
No, I don't think they're going to do that again. Or if they do, it won't be till WrestleMania.
But isn't that the match, though, where, you know, Lesnar finally gets beat after ending the streak?
I think...
Or do you think they...
I think they've lost... I think they've lost the dramatic weight of Roman being that guy, because ideally, Roman would have been over enough that he could have beat him at WrestleMania 31, and that would have been a year-long story. And the... I think they wanted to do that, right? That was going to happen until...
You will ask Mr. Heyman.
Well, yeah. I mean, maybe he'll know. But it seemed to me that that's what they wanted to do. And then the Seth Rollins cash in was a sort of like, right, okay, we'll concede a defeat here.
That was one of the greatest. That was, to give them credit, as in terms of a cop out or like getting out of something. Like,
oh yeah, it was perfect.
I don't think there's ever been a better scenario where everybody came out of that looking good.
And yeah, they did. But I just think that it created this gulf of who is the, and the thing is, if Roman does it now, I don't think it means as much as if he did it, you know, if he won the Rumble and built up to fight in Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania and became, you know, the Rocky, well, Rocky 2, where he beats the big name. I think Roman beating him now would just kind of piss people off because it's just not what people want to see. I don't know who you have defeat Lesnar at this point. Well, there's many people I'd like to see to do it, but they're just, none of them are probably ready to take that on.
So you think SummerSlam is going to be Cena Reigns?
I think so. The other name I had on the list, I did note down Randy Orton, but I don't particularly want to see that match either. I put that in with the Dean Ambrose. It's like, I've seen Orton and Reigns enough, and it's always dull. It's always boring. So I don't want to see that. And unless they do some kind of symbolic Cena Orton Reigns match, which I know has got people fucking but if, you know, if get two for one, you know, why not put Roman over both of your big stars in the last 10 years in one match, which is not an impossible thing to do. But obviously the idea, I think, of having Cena and Orton in the same ring after a bell goes gives a lot of people, you know, palpitations. Me included.
Just to kind of go off what you were saying, I'm leaning towards Roman and Brock for SummerSlam. Not necessarily saying that's what I want, but that's what I think the idea will be. Because what I wanted to ask you about was, and we will ask Paul Heyman this question as well, I think WrestleMania 32 was the first match in Brock's 4-year return that didn't feel like a Brock Lesnar match. I don't think it felt big or felt special.
Well,
Once the bell rang, because like, I was watching it back the other day, and when Brock comes out, it feels big. Brock Lesnar's coming out. And even when Ambrose comes out.
It's so early in the show as well.
Yeah, but like, but what was weird about it, if you go back and watch it, the entrances are all good, and Ambrose coming out, people loved Ambrose. But for whatever reason, as soon as the bell rang, and Lesnar...
Well, that's when the cold reality set in, and everyone realised that they should have been on board with me, who'd been telling everybody for about 6 weeks that this was not a match anybody wanted to see, because when the bell rang and it comes down to it, Dean Ambrose is not... He shouldn't be standing in a ring opposite Brock Lesnar. Sorry! I know there's a lot of advocates of the Ambrose Asylum out there, but he's just not been presented in a way that was a waste. I mean, there have been other Brock Lesnar matches that sucked. Like, two of the Triple H matches weren't great. Remember, he had the match with the Big Show at the Royal Rumble, which was a lot of pish. But this is the first time I've seen him on a big stage where it feels... I mean, a year before, when he walked out in Levi Stadium with the belt and the entrance and the Heyman intro, like, it just felt right. You were like, yes, this is the heavyweight champion of the world. Not just the wrestling champion, he's just the fucking champion of the world. All the things that you can be champion of. And then a year later, he's kind of stoking out to fight the guy in the jeans. Okay.
Do you think in hindsight, WrestleMania... I mean, they couldn't have known this. It's not like you can blame them for it, but do you think in hindsight it should have been Undertaker, Brock in a cell in Texas?
Yeah. I think I said this on the roundtable that... I mean, hindsight being... You know, hindsight's a horrible thing. You can't really use it. But I think that, you know, given what we got instead... Because remember, after SummerSlam, we all thought the rubber match will happen at WrestleMania, and that seemed to make sense. And then they were like, oh, by the way, at Hell in a Cell next month, we're doing Undertaker Lesnar 3. And we're like, wow. And the thing is, that match is so good, right? The Undertaker Lesnar Hell in a Cell and the SummerSlam match, those two matches are very, very good. And I think that, again, hindsight is what you're being a dick using it. Okay, I'm being a dick here, but I would have rather transplanted Taker and Brock in the Cell and put that at WrestleMania over Shane Taker or Brock Ambrose, because I think that the Taker-Lesnar match from Hell in a Cell last year is better than either of those matches, and that would have been the best match at WrestleMania.
Well, also not to
but,
not to
you know you can't to, you can't do those things. You can't be like, well, I would have done this because.
But not to be well. I mean, I like a bit of fantasy booking more than you do. But like to go back to one of my fantasy booking ideas last August that I think would have worked perfectly was, you know, when Undertaker lost slash won at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
The story should have been Undertaker doesn't really have it anymore, and they could have played it into, you know, at Hell in a Cell, he could have had a match in the cell with somebody else. Whoever it would be, almost like an exhibition match, and he wins it. It's quite easy for him to win it because it's not a big deal.
Or maybe
and then have.
Or maybe he would have cheated again, even though he didn't have to.
Well, what I was going to say is because then you could still have the Wyatts come out and attack him, and then he has to cheat to beat the Wyatts. So the cheating thing becomes part of the character. Like, he's not really got it anymore. You know, he has to use all these underhand tactics to beat the Wyatts, and it's, you know, and then eventually it comes to him and Lesnar, and can he beat Lesnar without the help? And I actually think that you would have told her, I mean, people would have gone nuts, but in hindsight, I think the idea of The Undertaker losing the streak at WrestleMania 30 and then having that kind of schmoz match
At SummerSlam,
I think you could have had Undertaker beat Brock in the cell.
You could have done it. I think I would have preferred a very theatrical sort of acknowledgement from the Undertaker. I would have still had Brock beat him. I think if Brock was the only guy that had ever beaten Undertaker at WrestleMania, and he did it twice, but that would have been kind of cool for Lesnar, and also. I would have liked Undertaker to sort of concede in the match at one point, like where he has the option to cheat, and then he realizes, like he accepts it. It would be heartbreaking. It would add a level of nobility to that character. That would have been a really big thing for him to go, right, I need to know that these last couple of months this has not been me. I'm not accepting that, you know, people, and my whole argument, the whole thing was just that I don't think there's any reason why he can't embrace his age. And,
yeah.
But, you and know, they did do it. But, yeah, but Lesnar reigns again. I don't know.
What we can argue is that both of those ideas were better than what they did at WrestleMania 32.
Yeah, I mean.
Which is a shame. The build-up was so, you know, there's so much to the idea of.
And actually, sorry to interrupt, but I did see somebody ask Jim Ross if they thought that was The Undertaker's last WrestleMania. And he said something like, if you think WWE are going to let one of their greatest performers of all time go out on such a whimper, then you're wrong. And I think a lot of people just kind of looked past the fact that he referred to the match as a whimper. And I'm like, yeah, you're right, JR. It was.
And, you know, I watched that match back the other day, and here's the thing about it is the match itself is actually pretty decent as a match. But the problem with it is that the two characters involved and the storyline that accompanied it needed it to be something a lot more dramatic and a lot more
interesting
than what they gave. Because what they did was perfectly serviceable, and Shane had a decent match and he could still go, and Undertaker did really well for his age and all that sort of stuff. But the problem was is that everybody, and I don't, and again I said this before, but I don't know whether this is on us as fans or on the company, but there was an expectation level that came from somewhere, and it felt like it didn't deliver that, and I think that's the problem. So I would defend the match in the sense that I don't think it was bad, but I think that, yeah, what Jim Ross is saying is pretty spot on, that it was a bit of a whimper. And also, thank you to Jim Ross, who has been retweeting our Paul Heyman tour as well.
Nice.
Lovely of him. And Lance Storm. So nice to see everyone getting involved there. Before we move on to the predictions, I wanted to bring something else up, which I thought was quite interesting, which was the, you know, you talked about it in a very serious and sensitive tone on our previous podcast.
Uh-oh.
Where you pitched that Stephanie McMahon's book...
Oh, Lady Balls?
...should be called Lady Balls.
Well, they have trademarked Lady Balls, so they're using it for something.
They are. I can't argue with your linking of those two things together. But, I don't know if you read that in the Wrestling Observer this week, they talked about that this book, the memoir of Stephanie McMahon, is deliberately going to be part of trying to get her over more with the audience as the face of the company. And as the sort of, you know, for when Vince stands down, that she then is the boss and people
what
take her seriously.
Is.
What a face it is. But earlier on this week, she was sending out some tweets about her book. And she sent her one saying, it is arguable. Let me just find the tweet here.
It is arguable that the slap is my finishing maneuver.
Who do you think has hit the worst? Was hit the worst? And there was a video of like her slaps. And then
hashtag
there was
Steph Book.
Hashtag Steph Book. That was her hashtag. And then in one of the best tweet responses I've ever seen in wrestling, Dave Bautista pops up and responds. So let me just read hers again, then I'll read his response. She says, it's arguable that the slap is my character's finishing maneuver. Who do you think was hit the worst? Hashtag Steph Book. Bautista replies, plus it helps to get guys over, sad face, and it builds a great angle for when you get your receipt, sad face. It looks good, frustrated face. I tried, sad face.
Hilarious.
Bautista again.
Dave Bautista throwing more shade at Stephanie McMahon than CM Punk ever did. I think on behalf of all wrestling fans everywhere, I apologise to Dave Bautista for the terrible treatment we gave him in early 2014. I mean, it was bad booking, and the best part of it is he would say it himself. But he was a treat we didn't know we had till he was gone. Did you see Dixie Carter's tweet about it?
No.
Yeah. She said, it is arguable that booking former WWE stars into the ground is my finishing maneuver. Who took it best? Hashtag Madam Scrotum. That's not true. I made that up. But she's such a prick. Stephanie.
Well, because this is the thing. Do you think that with Stephanie, is there any way that she could, like, in your eyes, all joking aside, is there a way for her to be taken seriously as the sort of nice face of the company?
I mean, is she not taken seriously? Like, joking aside about, you know, her character and how she is on screen, like, I don't think there's any kind of...
Well, here's the comparison, right? Let's use you as an example, right? Uh-oh. If you were at a wrestling show, a WWE show...
Right.
You could quite happily judge Vince McMahon's decisions, right?
Uh-huh.
You go, oh, that's terrible.
All the day long.
However, as soon as No Chance in Hell hits and he comes out, you're kind of into it. Because Vince McMahon. You know, like, there's this thing about him that most wrestling fans sort of forget. You know, people will complain about what he does, whatever, but if he comes out, they're doing the, you know, the We Are Not Worthy... They're, you know, singing along to his theme song. He's God of wrestling in a lot of ways.
Uh-huh.
With Stephanie, I don't think she commands anywhere near that level of respect from the audience.
No, she doesn't, but she's only... I mean, he's been around for forever. He's older. He's been, like, visually in our lives for a lot longer than Stephanie has. He's got more tenure. He's got... You know, that's... I don't think that's a fair comparison to make at this point.
But then... When you look at Triple H, Triple H has a lot more respect with the audience than Stephanie does.
Yeah, but maybe, like, most wrestling fans are just horrid misogynists. I don't know.
Well, or maybe it's just that, like, I feel like with Stephanie, I don't think she's good enough of an actress to portray a bad guy on TV and then a good guy in real life or
I think the irony is I think she's a good enough actress to portray a bad guy on TV. I don't know if she's a good enough actress to hide the fact that the bad guy persona is just actually who she is. Or that's how it seems anyway. But I think she gets taken seriously. You know, she does a lot of stuff, a lot of corporate stuff. She makes some faux pas, like the charity thing. The philanthropy is the new marketing thing.
I always remember something that Brian Maxwell Mann said that always kind of stuck with me about when he was in WWE as a writer in 2011. And he was talking... I'm sure you remember this, but like he was talking about how Stephanie... would always use these buzzwords and she would talk about things, but like Stephanie McMahon has never really experienced the real world. Do you know what I mean? Like she's always been in the WWE bubble. So yeah. She's never had to, Vince grew up and was abused as a kid and he had a lot of stuff that he went through before he, you know, it's the famous thing of like, he hates rednecks because he's deep down is one and tries to not be and tries to, distance himself from anything that he used to be. But Stephanie, like, she's never had to be part of the real world. So I don't think she understands. Like, it's all well and good for her to get an Eisenhower Fellowship or whatever. But, I mean, she's proven that she doesn't really know what she's doing creatively. And like you were talking about the whole, like, she did that. What was the charity thing that she said? What was it she said about charity?
She put out a tweet saying that, you know, big businesses taking part in philanthropy is the new market, and that's how brands are going to get over. So basically saying that you do charity work to look good,
which is just not something that. Well, is it? Here's the.
But it's true. Like, I mean, okay, it's not. It's a stupid thing to tweet, but it is a truth. It is why a lot of businesses do these things. Like, they don't necessarily do them out of the goodness of their own heart.
But you wouldn't ever catch, like, Vince tweeting that or Triple H.
Well, no, but they don't really use Twitter as much. I feel I don't really know what to say here, because I don't fully understand what the argument is, I'll be honest.
I think the argument is about, you know, this book thing is the idea is that this is going to propel her into being taken more seriously by the fan base and groom her to be the future face of the company. And it's not a role that I really buy her in as being genuine. I would buy Shane in that role a million times more.
Yeah, I don't think it's a difficult one, because I think that a lot of fans put stock in what a lot of other people have said about her. You know, like Paul Heyman, you know, hasn't had particularly nice things to say about her. Scott Steiner, our pal Scott, hasn't had particularly nice things to say about her. A lot of people in the business have said she's clueless. You know, she doesn't know how to book TV. She doesn't really know about wrestling and all that kind of stuff. So I get why the fans maybe don't respect her, but I guess it depends on what you think she's going to do, because in terms of being, like, the public face of the company in terms of business and, you know, that sort of stuff, like, I don't really think she has any issues. I think the problem, like, she's a great figurehead CEO for the company. You know, she's a young, relatively young, what is she, like, 37, 38?
Mm-hmm.
You're relatively young, successful woman in a male-dominated industry. I mean, it can't be ignored that the fact that it's only other men that trash her, that it's worth pointing that out. And a lot of it comes from she doesn't understand wrestling, which is, for me, you don't know how to be one of the boys, is what I think that they're saying, that you don't understand this because you're not one of the old white men that have ran this industry for, you know, 100 years or whatever. So I think that I feel kind of twofold about it, because I don't think that she's creatively a great mind like her father. And I think that maybe, like, booking television or writing the TV is not her strong point. I think that's fair. I accept those criticisms. But in terms of being the sort of, you know, public corporate face of the company, I already buy her in that role. I think she's good at it because she's very clearly, you know, pretty ruthless business-wise. I don't really have an issue with that. I mean, I think the problem is that a lot of fans and older fans, I include us in that bracket, is that they still kind of can't, you know, they still look at the WWE as being, you know, a wrestling company, which it isn't really anymore. And it's kind of like when Michael Eisner was in charge at Disney, okay? Lots of film critics and film fans hated him because he didn't really know anything about, you know, animation or stories. Or, and, you know, he was the guy that greenlit all the shitty sequels, like Cinderella 2, you know, Electric Glass Shoe-a-loo. And, you know, eventually he stepped down and he was replaced by the Pixar guy who made Toy Story, John Lasseter, who's now, you know, much more beloved. He's maybe your Shane McMahon and this kind of thing. But on the face of it, Eisner was a great corporate guy. He just didn't know anything about the art that was being produced. I think Stephanie McMahon's in that position. I think that's the problem. And the thing is that fans maybe get caught up in an argument like this where they go, well, I just don't think that she'll ever be like her father. And it's like, because, well, yeah, that's because you're saying that you don't respect her specifically as a writer, I think, you know, but in terms of all the stuff she does corporate-wise, apart from a few Twitter faux pas, she's obviously very good. You know, she does liaise with a lot of other businesses, and she makes these public appearances, and she goes to these Eisenhower fellow things and all that shit, all the stuff that we as wrestling fans don't really care about. We just care about whether Raw's any good. Is she a great influence on that? Probably not. But I think there's a wider scope there. And, you know, maybe wrestling just needs its John Lasseter. Maybe they just need the guy who can do both of those things really well. And she's not that person. But I don't really like hearing her being completely written off, because I think it does undermine some of the stuff that she has done. The problem with Stephanie is that she's quite unlikable, I think. And a lot of people don't want to praise her in any way, including me. You know, I've called her a prick like 10 minutes ago. Because on the whole, she does seem like a bit of an arsehole.
But I feel like she's one of these people that I think that if she likes you, or if she is at one of these events that you're talking about, if she's like, you know, being Mrs. WWE, she's probably incredibly charming, incredibly nice. But I think it's just if she didn't like you, that it would just be... I mean, because it's funny, whenever you speak to former people who work in the company, she's always very polarizing.
Yeah.
People either really clicked with her and she was great, or people either really didn't click with her and she wasn't. You know, it's like, remember that promo a couple of years ago on TV with Dusty Rhodes, when he put his hand up in her face?
Yeah.
And he was like banished from television because of it.
Yeah.
Like, he was just cut off because you can't dare say anything about the man's. But I think you've created a good argument about why she maybe should be the person that is the face of the company. Maybe she just doesn't need to be. Maybe it is more about that we compare her to Vince, because Vince was able to wear 12 hats, and maybe she's just not the person that wears all 12. Maybe she can do two or three of them.
Yeah. I mean, I remember that. Like, I think. I mean, actually, I might write something about this. Actually, I never realized how good a comparison this is. But the Michael Eisner Disney thing. I remember the quote exactly. When he was being, because I was really interested in this as it was happening, that when he was, you know, ousted from the company, basically Disney were accused of being soulless. They said, you know, Eisner is a ruthless CEO, and he saved a lot of money with cuts and sacking people, and he wasn't very well liked, but he was good at that stuff. But in terms of the product, not just the films, but, you know, stuff like the theme parks and all that sort of stuff, the branding was considered soulless by the time it came to a sort of political corporate campaign to have her removed. And I think that's maybe where Stephanie is, where a lot of people think that she's not very good at the telly stuff. You know, she's not a good booker. But not realising that, you know, that's not really... You can't just be that. You know, if being a great booker was enough to, you know, to be the sort of corporate face of a massive wrestling company, then Paul Heyman's ECW would still be around.
The problem, I think, one of the problems that Stephanie has, and this is not her, I'm not saying this is her fault at all, actually, I think it's just the era that we live in, is that, you know, now everybody who leaves the company can go on a podcast or can go out and talk about their experiences. And they can, you know, so like Justin Roberts, when he left the company, would talk about how, you know, it was him that actually found Connor McCulloch and cultivated that relationship. And then the PR statement was actually that Stephanie found Connor and that she started Connor's Cure, and Justin was kind of shoved out of the picture.
Yeah.
Which, as you're saying about the ruthlessness thing, she very clearly, whether people want to admit it or not, was behind the idea, you know, China will never step foot in this company again.
Oh yeah.
And then China dies, and then she's asked about it publicly and has to kind of, you know, she says, oh, China will be on there one day, and nobody believes her that she wants that to happen. People know that she has to say, it's like one of those, it's like when you have a teacher in school, and you can tell the teacher can't fucking stand you, but the teacher has to be nice to you to an extent.
They can't relate, yeah.
They can't just call you a wee cunt, they have to, you know, at least pretend that they can tolerate you. And I feel like sometimes with Stephanie, like, she'll say things, and I don't feel that she means it.
No, all joking aside, she's a great figure of fun for me when I do the podcast. Like, she's very easy to lampoon and make fun of and to be like, oh, she's this like mega bitch, Lady Balls of Mega Bitch Island, you know, like she's really easy to cast in that part.
But I do think
like, as a person, she is, there's more to her than that. She's a multifaceted person. She is quite, I find her quite fascinating actually, because like, let's not forget about, you know, I don't want to be that person, like, climbing up on that particular soapbox at the moment.
She's one of the greatest heels in wrestling right now.
Well, she is, but I don't mean that, but I just mean, I just think that she's, you know, she is a woman in her late 30s who is, you know, a very prominent corporate figure in a massive publicly traded company that's an entertainment conglomerate all over the world, and that is quite rare. Yes, she's also, you know, the daughter of the guy that was doing the job before her, but it's... But it is an achievement, and I just think that as much... I mean, I'm not saying, hey, guys, like, we should all be really nice to Stephanie, because I think she's done a lot of fucking reprehensible shit, but if we're going to have a really serious discussion, which, sorry, newbies, we do sometimes, it's not always just jokes and stupid chat, sometimes we actually try to have a good one, and I think this is actually inadvertently morphed into a good one. Yeah. I think that she should, on a serious level, be considered in more than one... way or in more than one light.
Yeah, it's that thing though, isn't it? You should be people are multifaceted. People aren't arseholes all the time or great all the time.
I know.
There's different elements. So, like, I think the thing with Stephanie is, you've talked about, she is a tremendous television performer. However, whether it's her or her husband, ego stops her from fully being effective. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
because, I mean, the thing is...
That's what Dave Bautista called her out on, effectively.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what we talked about in the podcast last couple of weeks. You know, everyone's been wondering for a couple of years now, like, how do you bring Bayley up to the main roster? Imagine if Bayley shut Stephanie up.
That would be the ultimate give back that she could...
If she has that in her to, you know, because it's not... I mean, as much as it's something... It doesn't mean much to me to have her allow Ronda Rousey to manhandle her, because that's
her pal.
Yeah, well, that's more like you're saying, well, somebody from outside of WWE can stand up to her, but nobody in the company can.
If she engaged in a program with Bayley and Bayley won and shut Stephanie up, I think that would be as big as Daniel Bryan going over Triple H.
Possibly bigger if you build it right.
Actually, yeah, because, you know, Triple H has been slayed before. Stephanie never has, it feels like. Or if she has, it was so long ago.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of examples, and I genuinely don't know if it is her, or if it's Triple H, or if it's Vince, or if it's a combination of the three, but, you know, there's various examples of her as an on-screen performer. You know, like, I can't remember the exact specifics of it, but I remember a couple of years ago, she came out during the time when AJ Lee was the women's champion or Divas champion, and AJ Lee was kind of dominating the division.
Yeah,
and Stephanie came out,
yeah,
and she, like, deliberately wore high heels to look bigger than AJ, and, like, all these weird little things that you just wouldn't ever think somebody would in their right mind do. And it's things like that, or the, you know, when Dusty Rhodes put his hand in her face, it actually really added to that promo. Because that was at the time where she was in the Authority and nobody got anything over her, and she was slapping the Big Show, and she was, you know, she just did anything. And like I've said before, the thing about Vince McMahon that was so effective was Vince McMahon would do all this, you know, reprehensible stuff, but he would always take the comeuppance.
In fact, yeah, he was, I mean, let's be honest, Vince spent more of his on-screen time getting his ass kicked than many people.
Yeah,
made him such a great villain, because you did get to see him get his ass kicked.
He did a thing in 2000, which I think is just an example of what he did. So Vince McMahon came back in late 2000 to try and get Mick Foley fired as the commissioner, because Mick Foley was, like, the babyface commissioner and everything was fun. So, of course, Vince came back to put a stop to it. And it was the lead up to the six-man Hell in a Cell at Armageddon. And Vince is in the ring, and he's trying to get Foley fired, and he's in his face and all that sort of stuff. And out of nowhere, The Undertaker's music hits. And The Undertaker comes out and just looks at Vince, doesn't say a word, and gives him the Last Ride powerbomb. And then Undertaker goes to leave. And as Undertaker gets halfway up the ramp, The Rock's music hits. And The Rock comes down, passes Undertaker, goes into the ring, gives Vince a rock bomb. Walks right back up the ramp. As Rock walks up the ramp, Steve Austin comes down, gives him a stunner. Vince just takes all these moves. And at the end of it, Foley's kind of laughing at him, and that's the end of it. And what it did was it hyped up that Sunday the three baby faces that were going into that match to try and win the championship.
Yeah.
And Vince's body was like, here is what I will do to have these three guys look stronger for Sunday.
But the thing that has to be noted at this point is that obviously, I don't know if anyone knows this, actually. This is a scoop. I think that people might not be aware of this. I don't know if everybody's visited DaveMeltzer.org and read this, but Stephanie McMahon is a lady.
Well, she's a woman.
She's a lady. She doesn't have she doesn't have a penis or balls. She has a vagina, and as a result of that, she cannot and probably should not, to be fair, in the PG world of WWE, cannot, and I think maybe probably shouldn't, because, you know, she did take some bumps from men back in the day, didn't she? Well, just ask Savage. I just think that...
Ooh, did you...
oh, dear. I've put myself off now. But yeah, one of the things that should be noted is that, obviously, there have not been many people, not many, I would say, women over enough where they could really, you know, attack Stephanie, or they could do something like what you're proposing with Bayley.
Well, I mean, an example.
But you know, there are ways to verbally shut her down that they could have done. But obviously, yeah, Vince's, you know, ace up his sleeve was the fact that he could take all those moves. He could get beaten up by the guys he needed to get over. But Stephanie can't do that.
Well, I just think what they need to do in that case, and again, I don't know if this is
she shouldn't, you know.
Yeah, she shouldn't be standing there slapping Roman Reigns three times. You know, maybe you can...
Not because he can't hit her back, but because they're not sophisticated enough to tell a story in which he can get one over on her in some way.
Yeah, and I think it's very, very relevant to bring up Raw on Monday, when there was the contract signing with Natalia and Charlotte, and Stephanie, you know, is trying to be a babyface, and she's trying to kind of... You know, tell Charlotte if Ric Flair comes out on Sunday that, you know, she's going to lose her championship. And then Stephanie slaps Ric Flair. Ric Flair decks it. And Charlotte goes up to Stephanie. And I think that, just personally, people were kind of digging Stephanie on Raw as a babyface. And I think that if Charlotte had been allowed to slap Stephanie and then have Natalia come in and put Charlotte in... Yeah, because if Natalia was actually saving Stephanie from more punishment and Charlotte had got that slap in, you would have got Charlotte over as the top heel woman. But instead, that wasn't allowed to happen. And I just feel like if you're going to put Stephanie in all these environments, and again, I'm not saying this is her that's at fault. Maybe it's the writing, maybe it's the management. But she shouldn't be in all these environments where she is. I mean, it's like the introduction of the women last year when it was like she was the PE teacher and she was assigning teams. You know, it's flawed to have her around because she's not ever written to get her comeuppance. But it's like, we always go back to this example. It's like Breaking Bad with Walter White. One of the great things with Walter White was he had so many ups and downs. You know, sometimes he had a great day and things were going for him. Sometimes he was down in his luck and he was so multifaceted as a character that you were able to invest in him. But with Stephanie... She is a character that always wins, always gets the best of people, and always runs the show, and is always a bigger star than everyone else. And I think that's a problem for her character.
Well, I'm going to have to... This is a conversation we could carry on for another half an hour. We've already gone long. We only wanted this to be an hour-long podcast, and we are already just over the hour mark. And
I thought it was a good discussion, though.
It was, but the reason I'm pulling it up is not just because we have to get the Extreme Rules preview done, because I also have some breaking news.
Oh, good breaking news or bad?
Well, it's not going to be good for some people. I think it's safe to say, as you know, I'm sure you do know this, Kenny, that Cody Rhodes maintains a Stardust Twitter and a personal Twitter. Mm-hmm. And on his personal Twitter, 17 minutes ago, he tweeted... The past 10 years have been quite the trek, but as of earlier today, I have asked for my release from WWE. I'll speak further on the matter shortly. Thank you to all the pro wrestling / sports entertainment fans worldwide. Thank you. So, breaking news, Cody Rhodes has asked for his release, and that means no more Stardust, no more Cody. He's leaving the company.
Again, going back to that Kevin Eck interview I was telling you about earlier on, which I encourage people to check out. It was on PW Torch. One of the things he talked about was Cody Rhodes, and he mentioned that Vince never saw star potential in Cody Rhodes.
Stardust potential, but not much.
Yeah, so he like that Vince liked the Stardust thing because it was like, you know, Cody's a good hand and he's decent and he can kind of fill a role that way. But I mean, earlier this year, I think we had this discussion on the show actually that, you know, last year we had the discussion on the show about when Dusty Rhodes died, would that be what would sort of cultivate him coming back as Cody Rhodes again? And he didn't. But yeah, I do think he's someone that was underutilized and could have done more. And I enjoyed quite a lot of his gimmicks. I really liked the dashing Cody Rhodes. I really liked the kind of two-faced version of him where he was, you know, had the mask on his face. I thought his tag team with Goldust in 2013 was one of the best parts of the Authority storyline, especially when they beat the Shield to the tag titles with Dusty in the corner. What do you think of old Cody, or young Cody?
You know, talented guy, floundered for too long, and stuck around too long with damaging gimmicks long term. I mean, there were a few times where they could have pulled the trigger on him to try and make him a really big name, and I'm not talking about making him a world champion, I just mean making him someone that doesn't feel like, you know, just any old performer. And, you know, it's kind of weird that his, you know, his brother, Goldust, is arguably still the bigger name, which is, you know, he didn't really ever eclipse him in terms of popularity, I don't think. And they just never really seemed to know what to do with him, but which is a shame because I think he is really good and could have been great. And I'm sure we'll talk about it more when more news comes out. I mean, this is literally, he has just tweeted this that it's happened. We don't know whether he's going to be granted his release, but obviously by saying it publicly, we're potentially getting into Rey Mysterio type territory here where, you know, it could get messy. We'll see what happens.
Would you like me to lighten the mood with some mainstream news?
Okay.
Okay, the Independent newspaper.
Okay.
I've just reported that Susan Sarandon, the uh-huh. famous actress of
oh no
Rocky Horror, Dead Man Walking fame,
uh-huh.
Has suggested that she would like to, after she retires from acting, direct pornography.
I'm cool with that.
She says that
I thought you were going to say she was dead. I was like, oh,
no,
Susie.
We'd have to have a seance if that was the case. She criticizes adult films for not making it appear pleasurable from a woman's perspective.
Ah, okay. Well, that's an odd thing to mention. But let's just go through the Extreme Rules card because this podcast is going on forever.
I genuinely am quite sad that Cody Rhodes has got released, but I do think it's a
he hasn't been released. He's asked for his release.
Well, that's what I mean, that he's asked for it, that he's leaving. But I actually think it's probably going to be the best thing for him because he is only like 30, 31. He's very young. So why not go somewhere else and try and kind of make a name for yourself and come back? Look at Luke Gallows.
Indeed. Speaking of Luke Gallows, he's performing at Extreme Rules. We're going to do our Extreme Rules predictions now. So let's look to the pre-show, if we must.
You're not even going to do a musical interlude?
Nah.
Is that because you're editing this week and you don't want to do it?
No, I just didn't really see the need to. It's gone. The show's gone on too long. Why extend it with the 30 seconds of some horrible theme tune that they probably picked for this? But Extreme Rules is happening in New Jersey at the Prudential Center. So it'll be a big crowd for Roman, that's for sure. Let's look to the pre-show. Dolph Ziggler versus Baron Corbin. What do you think?
We did this a month ago and we both were like, Corbin, without even thinking about it. But I feel like even though last month did me wrong, this month is doing me right. It's Baron Corbin all the way.
Yeah, it has to be Corbin, right? Good God. Although it's funny that, you know, it feels like he needs this win and Ziggler just needs to have a conversation with Cody Rhodes. Moving on to the main pay-per-view. Now, I went to get the card from Wikipedia, okay?
Source of all information.
And they are actually listing this as The Club, Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows, versus The Bloodline, Jimmy Uso and Jey Uso. I thought without Roman they would just have been referred to as the Usos. But apparently, on Wikipedia at least, they're being referred to as The Bloodline. So I don't think that means they're going to come out as that on... I think they'll just come out as the Usos, but... You would think. Anyway, I think for the sake of old Moni face, David J. McCutcheon, fellow podcast contributor, I really hope the club go over here because I think they really need to win. And it would go some way to repairing some of the. I don't think it's irreparable damage that they've been beaten up by Roman and the Usos a fair bit over the past couple of weeks. But I think it would be a good idea to open the pay-per-view with this match, have the club go over the Usos, and then note that, well, they've kicked off the momentum. Will AJ Styles carry on? They took care of the Usos there at the picture. Is AJ going to complete the double and win his match later on? I think that would be the best way to go. And I think that is, I don't know if they'll, say that stuff, but I think the club are going to win. I think Anderson and Gallows have got this. I hope. Dear God, I hope.
Yeah. I think they have to win this. And, I spoke to David McCut earlier this week, actually, on the last Raw reaction over at What Culture, and I feel like Gallows and Anderson are being beaten up a bit too much by Roman Reigns. It's getting a bit much. So they need a dominant win here, and I think they're going to get it. And I think they're going to be...
And it's a tornado tag match, which they don't do that often, and they're always quite fun.
They are. And I also think that... Gallows and Anderson will be good opponents for the New Day because I think the New Day, as popular as they are, have not really had a team that have really challenged them.
We've never really seen the New Day getting their ass kicked.
Or in a really engaging program.
That's true. They kind of just carry the whole thing themselves. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens. And you said it was going to be an easy edit for me, but I'm going to have to go back and beep out all these references to What Culture, Kenny. Good God. next up. Oh... It's an asylum match. Dean Ambrose versus Chris Jericho. I just don't give a shit about this. WWE logic suggests that Dean Ambrose should win his own gimmick match, but WWE, history also suggests that they can very fucking well put the other guy over. No, I think Ambrose is going to win. Jericho's, going to put the kid over. He's going to... bring down his comedy props, his mop and bucket, and I'm going to continue to just have utter disdain for this character. I just don't like the Dean Ambrose character. Please just let this be it. If Jericho's around for a little while longer, I really want to see him in matches against people I actually want to see him wrestle. I just don't care. But I think Ambrose is going over.
I'm going to go the opposite way. I think Jericho goes over. I think Jericho moves on to a bigger program. I think that Ambrose, for now... I don't even think if Ambrose wins, it's going to make me any more interested in him. Or,
but do you really think that they can sort of give him his own gimmick match effectively and have him lose it? Yeah, they can because he's the guy that got blown up by a TV. So
he's the guy that got beat by a hologram.
Yeah. You're probably right. I'm going to say Ambrose, but you're probably fucking right.
And I'm happy about it if it's Jericho. This is not coming from a place of I'm really sad. Like. My Dean Ambrose fan club card expired a couple of months ago.
Yeah. Now, I am most excited about this next match. I'm probably equally as excited about the main event, but the Fatal 4-Way match for the Intercontinental Championship, The Miz versus Kevin Owens versus Cesaro versus Sami Zayn. I think, to borrow a Meltzoid cliche, this has got Match of the Year written all over it. I think with a good bit of time, good 15 minutes... this could be fucking brilliant.
Yeah, I know this will be a lot of fun. I think it's going to be... You've got the work rate of Cesaro, Sami Zayn, and Kevin Owens with the character work of Owens and Miz and the underdog of Sami Zayn. There's so many different elements to this. But my prediction is, I think The Miz retains his Intercontinental Championship. And I think he should. He's a great character with that belt. I think Sami and Kevin can go on to feud without it. And Cesaro will probably end up in Money in the Bank.
Yeah, I think my gut says The Miz retains here. My gut says most people are going to be retaining their titles in this show. But I did have a conversation with Sandra, though, where I thought that if they wanted to put some gold into the Owens-Zayn saga, there are worse ways they could do it than by actually... really, really frustrating Kevin Owens by having Sami Zayn win this. And Owens just loses his mind because he's like, well, I beat him so many times. He lost at WrestleMania. I beat him the next month. Somehow he finds himself in the third quarter title match. He sneaks a win. He can't pin Owens. He pinned The Miz to get the belt. And he's like, now Sami's intercontinental champion. He didn't deserve it. and they just go, you know, Kevin Owens goes Tonto on him. I think that'd be a fun story, but so, but I'm not gonna go with that in terms of predictions. I think the Miz is gonna retain.
Yeah, I mean, they could do that. I think the Miz is likely to retain. I don't really like the idea of Sammy winning the belt yet. I like the idea of him. The Sammy thing is a long term story for me. I don't want to see him.
I think it's a long term story for everybody.
It is, but I just don't want to see Sammy. I think there's a better story in Sami Zayn taking a long time to get his first title, and it means more for me. So I'm going to go with Miz.
Well, I'm going with the Miz as well. US title match, Rusev versus... Sorry, I just nearly fell asleep. Kalisto. it's Rusev versus...
The man who blocked me on Twitter.
Did he?
Uh-huh.
What did you say?
So Rusev tweeted out about International Victory Day.
Uh-huh.
And then Kalisto replied, and he was being a wee dick, and he said something like, you know, oh, you're a fat man with an ugly woman or whatever. And I just tweeted back saying, hey, Kalisto, I've got Rusev's back, you wee prick. And he blocked me.
Well, you probably...
So, not only...
You probably deserved it.
Not only is he a boring bastard, but he has no sense of humour. So, fuck him. But you know, this is the match that I'm the most terrified of. Because Rusev is genuinely one of my favourites. All joking aside, I love the guy. So talented. But I have this fear. You know, if you go with the WWE logic of, you know, whoever looks strong on Raw loses on the pay-per-view. I have a fear that Kalisto is going to win. But I refuse to put that fear into motion. So I'm going to say Rusev will win the US title here.
You think?
I hope. I have to hope.
I don't think so. I am a big fan of Kalisto as a wrestler. He's very, very talented. Very, very good. The character is...
Great commentator.
The character is non-existent. Like, there's nothing to him. He's not interested. It's hard, really, to... Like, when you don't have the sort of... Like, I mean, Rey Mysterio wasn't the most interesting, you know, three-dimensional character, but he'd been around for such a long time, and he was so sympathetic, and you felt like you kind of knew him in some way. And he kind of felt legendary. Kalisto feels very new, and I know he's been around for a long time, but I just think that, yeah, it's not a great character, and I feel bad for him. I mean, to be honest, I probably would have blocked you as well. It was a straight joke, mate. But he's just not the right guy at this moment to have the title, and I want Rusev to win, but I think Kalisto's going to keep it. I think Kalisto's going to retain. Sorry, I don't want it to happen. I will be the happiest pair. This will be the most happiest I'll ever have been to be wrong, but I think Kalisto's probably going to retain. Submission match. Sorry, submission match for the WWE Women's Championship, and if Ric Flair comes to ringside and breaks his ban, Charlotte will lose the title. So Charlotte is going it alone in defense against Natalya. A lot of Natalya fans, this is probably her best work that she's done over the last couple of months, but I just think that Natalya is the fodder to build Charlotte as the dominant first WWE Women's Champion. And I think Charlotte's going to retain. And I think that's the right decision. I think Natalya's great. I really, really like her. And sure, maybe somewhere down the line, she can get one of those sort of, you know, thanks for all your hard work runs. But I think in terms of, you know, the first run with this belt, I think whoever has it needs to keep it for a very long time and be really built up until they get knocked down by Sasha Banks at SummerSlam. And I think that...
Not that you have any specific time frame.
Oh, no, absolutely not. But yeah, I think Charlotte's gonna win.
Yeah, I don't mean this to be a sort of a negative Nancy, but I don't think Natalya is anywhere near good enough on promos the way she would need to be to have the belt. I think that this is an example of not getting what you want is actually what the story should be. You know, we all should want Natalya to get it, but ultimately she shouldn't. You know, it's like when you would watch... It's not the same thing, but it's like in 2000 when you would watch Triple H as the WWF champion facing a mid-card guy, and you loved the mid-card guy, and you're like, oh, I really want him to win, but when Triple H beat him, you just hated Triple H more, so it added to your hatred.
For a number of years, I said, why can't they just book one of the top heels like they booked Triple H in late 1999, early 2000? And, well, they kind of are with Charlotte, and I'm cool with it. even though it's total nepotism, but whatever. Tag team title match, The New Day, defending against the Vaudevillains. I don't know. Part of me thinks, oh, this could be a wee upset. You know, maybe the Vaudevillains steal the titles. But I think The New Day probably have this.
Yeah, and The New Day retain here. I know that David and Sondra absolutely loved the Time Machine thing on Monday. I don't think it was that great. I liked the beginning of it. But I think the thing with The New Day is The New Day have been around for almost a year in their current form of being, you know, comedic and stuff. But they've still not had a great program. And I think they really need one soon because it's starting to wear off. Because unless they have a good team to kind of, you know, go off against, it doesn't really work. And I quite like the idea of a serious Anderson and Gallows coming in and sort of, you know, laying waste to The New Day and then having to kind of pick up a little bit of a more serious tone for the most part.
Yeah, like, could they do a thing where, I mean, obviously The New Day have the Freebird thing going on. Could they do a Freebird thing with AJ, Gallows and Anderson?
They could, yeah.
That would be kind of fun. Like, I think the matches would be great. I mean, obviously, people would be like, oh, AJ Styles has been buried in the... He's in the tag division now. And it's like, well, if we're getting entertaining matches and it's fun to watch on TV, then I don't really mind that much. But speaking of Captain Haircut, AJ Styles is getting his second shot. I say that because I saw a picture of him the other day. It was a picture of him when he wrestled in Scotland. He wrestled Noam Dar, who's going to be in the WWE Global Cruiserweight Series. And I just saw AJ with his short hair. And I know he gets a lot of shit from people for his current haircut, but it's way better. When you look back at when he had the kind of short, spiky hair, he just looks like such a dweeb. But I'm kind of digging his luscious Farrah Fawcett flick. Extreme Rules. That sounds like something you would say.
Wait a minute. I didn't do anything here. I'm just sitting here.
It just sounds like something you would say.
No, it doesn't.
What, you would compliment a wrestler for their Farrah Fawcett haircut? I think.
All I'm going to say is, in the last couple of months at Inside the Ropes, one man has been judging fashion and hairstyles more than another, and that man is you, Robert Duffin.
I know. I'm sending out some mixed signals to fans of Inside the Ropes. Somebody, I can't remember who it was now, but I put a tweet out I was basically making fun of myself because I went out last Friday night and I was like, I'm going to a nightclub. And someone who I'm sure follows me because they listen to the podcast was like, just sent a message saying, Polo? ?
Did they?
Yeah. And I was just like, oh no. So I'm going to have to start talking about how I like to, you know, drink beer and play football.
For the lovely listeners of Inside the Ropes that are not from Glasgow, Polo is a gay establishment in Glasgow where listeners think that Robert frequents.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, there's definitely nothing wrong with it. I've heard the music's wonderful, and lots of the men walk around with muscly tops and all that. See, this is the kind of conversation that starts to send out the mixed signals. Shut it down! Let's talk about AJ Styles.
I'm proud of you, Robert, for embracing yourself.
Oh, man, the irony. Extreme Rules match.
You were talking about AJ Styles' hair and how you love the way it looks. Go back to that.
Oh, dear.
Okay. And how you wanted to see him involved with more men on a weekly basis. And you wanted like six of them at one time.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, thanks for this. You're really helping the cause. 31 and single. Because everybody thinks I'm a raging homo. Extreme Rules match for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. The beautiful AJ Styles versus the sexy Roman Reigns. I think it's a no-brainer, unfortunately. It's going to cause a lot of grief for people. They're going to be like, ah! But I think Roman's going to retain, and I think the match is probably going to be great, because I still think their match last month was fucking brilliant, and I loved it. And I'm happy to see these two guys go at it again. Yeah, it sucks that he lost at WrestleMania, and okay, it's a bit shitty if Vince McMahon's pulling this whole, well, I didn't create the club, so they're not going to be very good on my TV show. Which is stupid. Yes, it's stupid. But, you know, the match is great. I've enjoyed Roman and AJ's work together. I've enjoyed seeing them going at it every week. I've enjoyed seeing
Nobody
them.
Nobody doubts that you enjoy them going at it, Roman.
I enjoy seeing them going at it. I enjoy seeing them get to grips with one another. I'm doing it bluntly next. But the I think these two together have been an unexpected gem. And yes, AJ Styles is probably going to lose. And no, he's not going to be at Wrestle Kingdom in January and be WWE champion by the mid part of the year. But I still think he has slotted in very nicely to WWE. He's been in significant matches at every pay-per-view and in the main event at two pay-per-views. I really don't think that they don't value what he brings. And I think the Royal Rumble reaction was a big part of it. And I think he's golden. I think he's fine. I think he might be WWE champion one day. But I can't remember the last... I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but when was the last time they brought someone in this strong or brought someone up this strong? I mean...
That's ultimately why
I'm preemptively saying, you know, oh, please don't spend the 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. UK time period, you know, bombarding us with tweets about how, you know, AJ's getting buried.
Well, this is why I disagree with David McCutcheon so much on it, is that the thing is, yeah, Vince McMahon is traditionally not, you know, pushed the smaller guys and the guys from different companies, and they've let AJ Styles come in with his, keep his name, keep his catchphrase, keep his finishing move. So not his catchphrase, like his moniker, phenomenal one. And within 4 months, he's headlining pay-per-views. I think the thing with the Roman Reigns feud is that there's two ways you can look at it. You can either look at it as, oh, I really want AJ Styles to win. He's so much better than Roman Reigns. If you look at it from that point of view, you're going to end up being disappointed because he's not going to win. The way that I try and look at it is, I'm pretty sure that AJ Styles is not going to win, but I'm really excited to see him in this spot. And then through my thinking of it like that, I managed to suspend my disbelief at Payback and twice think that he was going to win and be really invested. And not every pay-per-view can get me like that, but that one did.
Yeah. So
I think any time that can happen is a good thing. I think that he's in a great spot.
I mean, it's a crazy thing to say, but I can't remember the last time I bet for near falls like I did in that match. Like, really thought, shit, it's happening. And I was so excited. But I sort of appreciated the work from both guys and how they got me really into it.
Yeah, and I think that's the key. So if you can look at it like that in that sense, then you'll really enjoy it. And I think that everybody is intrigued, quite rightly so, as to what AJ Styles is going to do after this.
Yeah, I think the thing to remember is that when AJ first turned up, I was like, I coughed. And then I said, oh, well, am I going to have to watch a year of, you know, AJ, nothing against these guys, but think about what they did with say, Brian, okay? Am I going to have to, Brian, sounds like something from Family Guy. Am I going to have to see AJ wrestle Dolph Ziggler for a couple of months, and then he's going to wrestle Cody Rhodes for a couple of months, and then he's going to have a feud with, do you know what I mean? Do you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah. Like, just kind of.
Yeah, but they've not brought him in as this kind of mid card guy. Like, they brought him in big. You know, they put him right up against Reigns in the Rumble. They gave him the couple of months with Jericho. Now he's back with Reigns in the main events. And I just don't think he's going to slip down necessarily. You know, yeah, he might involve himself with guys like Sammy or Kevin Owens or Cesaro, which is fine. Maybe even Ambrose at some point, but I actually think that AJ is already a bigger star than Dean Ambrose, Sami Zayn, Cesaro, Kevin Owens, all those guys. He's bigger. They've already booked him bigger, and I think that's really cool. And okay, yeah, he's not losing. He's not winning over the Golden Boy, but as much as we're like, oh, you know, Vince didn't invent something, so he doesn't make it a big deal. As much as that can and has proven to be the case, I think that what they've done with AJ is, well, it's nothing short of phenomenal. No, I'm kidding. It's just, you know, I think it really is a very much against the grain over what they surpassed.
It has surpassed all of my expectations of what they would do with him. And I'm
interested to see what happens next. I mean, I want to see, I mean, come on, guys. This year, there's a chance we're going to see AJ Styles versus John Cena. I know it's happened before, but not to the extent that it will this time. Or AJ
Styles versus Brock Lesnar.
Seth Rollins. AJ Styles versus Seth Rollins is probably going to happen. It's exciting. It's exciting, guys. And yeah, okay, Roman's probably going to beat him. But you know what? I'll take another Roman Reigns win. You know what? I don't know. Maybe I've been in the trenches so long that I really don't care that my feet are starting to rot away. But I'm just happy that AJ's there and he's having great matches. And yes, wins and losses do matter. But I think AJ's so good that I kind of kind of don't mind. I mean, yeah, I would like to see him win his next pay-per-view match, sure. But I don't know why. I mean, come on. If you're a long-time listener, you know that usually I would be the guy shitting all over this. And I'm just not. And I'm not doing it deliberately. I'm not like saying, right, okay, you know, just enjoy this for the sake of it. Because if you get worked up about it, you'll get annoyed and pissed off. I genuinely am enjoying it. And I really don't mind that Roman's going to win. But if AJ does win, I'm going to be really excited. But he's not going to. And I can't let myself believe that. I'm not going to let myself believe that. I'm totally not going to fall for any of those near falls this time. Nope. No siree.
So I guess that's pretty much the show this week. We will be back on Monday with a kind of quick recap of Extreme Rules, kind of break it down a little bit before the Ultimate Roundtable later on in the week. We'll also have Rich Brennan, former WWE announcer, with us to talk about his run in the company. Paul Heyman tickets go on sale on Monday, so go to insidetheropes.co.uk on Monday evening, 5 o'clock for London, 6 o'clock for Manchester, 7 o'clock for Glasgow. You can keep updated with that at facebook.com/ITR live or on Twitter at @inside_theropes.
And you can also get us, me and Kenna, on Twitter at KennyMC1985 or at Bertie_ITR. Please do come and follow us for a very good conversation.
Hello, this is Bruno Sammartino, and you're listening to the Inside the Ropes. So please tune in for very interesting conversations.
Also, if you're listening to this on Saturday night and you see Robert and Polo, make sure and say hello. We will be back on Monday. Robert, I think it's only fair to close the show. Give us one of your big gay anthems just to close us out.
Oh dear. You won't know it's me in Polo because I wear one of those gimp masks with a zip mouth. You won't know it's me. I'm a totally heterosexual man.
Cut
goodbye.
It down.
Hey, goodbye. Hey, hey, hey.